This is Changemakers with Katie Gore, finding the right solutions for the affordable housing community.
This week's changemaker is Carol Naughton. Carol is the CEO of Purpose Built Communities, an organization that helps transform struggling neighborhoods into places of opportunity and well-being. Carol has devoted her entire career to advancing social justice, economic opportunity, and health equity for low-income families across the country. Carol, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Katie. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for being here. It's going to be a great conversation about something that is so new and innovative to our world. So let's start. If you would like to share with us about your past experiences that really have ultimately led you to where you are and who you are today.
So I started my career as a commercial real estate lawyer here in Atlanta and worked for a couple of great firms, learned a lot. But I had one of those moments of clarity in 1994. And those of us of a certain age will all remember this. My moment of clarity started with the O.J. Simpson's Bronco Chase. And that was the summer of 1994. I found out that night that I was pregnant with my second child, and I was really, really sick. That gave me a chance to slow down a little bit, not in a necessarily good way, but I slowed down. I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I couldn't go to work because I was so sick. The only thing I could do was really listen to the TV in a dark room, and everything was 24/7 O.J. Simpson. And it put me in a position of really needing to kind of confront for the first time in my kind of privileged life that Black people in America had had a fundamentally different experience with the justice system than white people had. That made me really think, what am I doing with my career? Is this why I went to law school to be a commercial real estate lawyer? And I felt like I needed to make a change and do something different. And so when I came back from maternity leave after my daughter was born, I found a new job, and that job was at the Atlanta Housing Authority. And that was taking the skills that I had learned as a commercial real estate lawyer to create a new model for affordable housing. How could we create what we now call mixed income housing? How could we marry up public and private resources so we could deliver really great housing to serve people across a broad range of income so we wouldn't isolate, marginalize, or warehouse low-income people simply because they happen to be low-income people. And that was really kind of the pivot in my career. I loved working for the Atlanta Housing Authority. I had an amazing boss and mentor in Renee Glover, who was the CEO, and had a chance to work in the Eastlake neighborhood with another amazing woman named Eva Davis, who is the president of the Eastlake Meadows Tenants Association. And when I look back on people who were really influential in my life, both Renee and Miss Davis were there. They really both helped shape me into becoming the professional and the person that I am today, and really helped me find my sense of purpose in this work that has become, you know, really improving neighborhoods so that neighborhoods become pathways to prosperity for everyone who lives there.
What an interesting journey to take you from quite a personal place and health, you know, incident to now working in communities, all because of this moment of enlightenment, I guess you could call it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, being sick and being stuck in bed for a number of weeks with, you know, the kind of morning sickness that used to kill people, and then pneumonia, turned out to be an enormous blessing in my life, that that I slowed down enough to listen to what was going on in the rest of the world and think about, well, what role might I play in creating an America that was closer to what we aspired to be?
And it's very similar to other people's journeys when such national, large incidences happen. It really changes some philosophies, or it changes some frameworks of mind. So it's very inspiring to hear kind of how your journey just really evolved here and takes us now to purpose-built communities, which is why we're talking. So you've been there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You've been CEO. So tell us, what is your company about, and explain some of your strategic priorities.
Purpose Built Communities is a nonprofit organization that works really closely with local leaders across the country to improve their neighborhoods so that those neighborhoods become places where the people who live there experience greater racial equity, better health outcomes, and upward economic mobility. We are neighborhoodists. The word does not roll off the tongue easily, but we are neighborhoodists. We understand that neighborhoods are really powerful. They shape how we think about our role in the world. They shape where we live, what opportunities we might have, what challenges we might have to face. And so we want to strengthen neighborhoods, neighborhoods that have been defined by concentrated poverty and created as a result of the malintended policies and practices of the last 150 years, so that those neighborhoods really become springboards, neighborhoods that where we're able to align a variety of systems and processes so that people in the neighborhood really have a chance to participate in the American dream.
It's interesting because a neighborhood can be both the negative and the positive influence in one's life. Mm-hmm. And so what you're trying to do is identify, and I'm kind of just summarizing here, but you're identifying what those influences are and then trying to mobilize a structure to combat some of those. How does that play out in people's lives? Like what's it look like?
So thank you. Great question. You know, it's really a big change management process that starts with people who live in the neighborhood and leaders in the community who might look and say, you know what, we deserve better than this, frankly. We might live in a place where our housing is substandard. We might live in a place where the school system has been unable to deliver excellent education. And as a result of those two big things alone, lots of other pathways forward become less likely. Doesn't mean that some people won't find a great pathway forward. It just means that the average kid is unlikely to find a pathway to prosperity. And so mm-hmm. what we want to do is work with the neighborhood to strengthen housing, education, health and wellness, and economic vitality in that neighborhood. And we have a very specific approach by how we do that. We work with local leaders that ultimately form what we call a community quarterback organization, which is a almost always, but not always, newly created nonprofit organization that helps bring people together who live in the neighborhood, people who work in the neighborhood, organizations based in the neighborhood or serving that neighborhood together to say, what could we do together if we were working in a coordinated, effective way and we developed a really robust plan, an executable, financeable plan to improve the conditions in which people live, work, play, and learn. And those elements, we call them pillars in our approach, those four pillars are really important. The first one is high-quality mixed-income housing. How might we help the neighborhood achieve high-quality housing, rental housing that serves people across a really broad income level? Then we think about how can we help the community create what we call a cradle through college education pipeline, neighborhood serving. So great high quality early learn that starts with, you know, brand new babies and gets every little genius ready for college and career. And we think about the kinds of health and wellness amenities that every neighborhood wants, but are too often lacking in low income neighborhoods. And then finally, we think about economic vitality. How does money flow in a neighborhood? Who owns the businesses? Who has the jobs? What is the opportunity for entrepreneurship and other kinds of wealth building in the neighborhood for the people who live there? And all of that work ultimately is kind of not executed by, but coordinated and sustained and nurtured by this community quarterback organization and really best-in-class implementation partners across these areas. So great real estate developers, great education partners, great folks in the health and wellness world who work together to execute upon this plan. It may take 10 years to get it all implemented, and that sounds like a long time, but when you're talking about the arc of a neighborhood, you realize that 10 years is a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. It used to be people would have to escape the neighborhoods to try to thrive if they didn't have access to all of these things you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is you're saying, why isn't the neighborhood able to build itself and pull all of these resources and then let people thrive in the neighborhoods that they should love, they should embrace, they should feel welcomed and have what the neighborhood, you know, a couple of miles away has. So it's really quite a radical change in philosophy of saying you don't have to escape it, but you deserve where you are in place.
I think that was really well said. What happens now in most places, if you're living in a neighborhood that doesn't offer you the kind of opportunities that you're seeking, as soon as you get a little change in your pocket, you move. Mm-hmm. You do what anybody would move, right? Anybody would move because they would say, you know, gosh, the schools, I can now afford to be in a place with better schools, or I can afford to be in a better place with housing that meets my needs now. And our goal is to strengthen those neighborhoods so that they can compete for people when they have those choices to make. Right. So we don't think the same people have to be poor forever. And if people are, when people have opportunities through both programs and opportunities that are executed through this work, we would love them to make the choice to stay in that neighborhood if that's what works for their family. But the failure to think about comprehensive neighborhood revitalization almost by definition means that as people who live there do have choices, they will execute those choices and leave. They will vote with their feet and leave. And so we want neighborhoods to compete, to be able to say, yeah, we want people to stay, plant a flag in the neighborhood because it's going to be great for their family and for themselves.
I love it. The concept of a community quarterback, that is so appropriate in analogy or what you're trying to do. How do you think the community quarterback is playing out in real time now that you guys have been doing it for several years? Do you want to brag on a community? Do you want to tell us a before and after?
Yeah, I can brag on a number of them. I want to emphasize again, I think the community quarterback organization is the secret to success in this work, simply because it takes so long, right? If you don't have a small group of people who get up every day and think about how are we executing the plan, what is our ongoing strategy for strengthening this neighborhood so that the people who live there have all the choice in the world about what they want to do with their life and what they want to, how they want to contribute to the world going forward. So if you don't have that organization who's thinking about that, who's that, you know, engine of ongoing change, that engine of both equity and excellence, the market's just going to do what the market will do.
Right.
And that well-meaning partners, you know, might all sign on for something on the front end. But unless there's an organization that's kind of continuing to nurture that collaboration, that's measuring success and helping garner resources for the effort, most of the time, those organizations start to, the gravitational pull of how they normally do business pulls them apart, and you lose that sense of collaboration and that sense of working together to create something bigger together than any of them could do on their own. And so I want to emphasize that the community quarterback is really this, the secret sauce in this work. And so if I wanted to look at really successful community quarterbacks, the first one I'd have to call out would be the Eastlake Foundation, which is the model of the community quarterback in our world. And it's been in place for 27 years, and over the years has worked with public sector partners, private partners, educators, and most importantly with community members to really plan to first, I think, listen and understand what the community wanted and needed and bring those resources to bear. Over time, the Eastlake Foundation has and its partners have built about 650 units of apartment homes, mixed income apartment homes that serve people really well from the very lowest income families in the community to much higher income families. It's created a wonderful school that really anchors the community. It's one of the best schools in the state that serves almost 2,000 kids in the community, you know, from cradle through 12th grade, and kids graduate, you know, at about a 99% rate. So, I mean, there's lots of ways that you can visit Eastlake and you can see the work of the community quarterback and how it's created these deep, durable pathways to prosperity for the community. And you can see that they're still thinking about, well, what does our community need now? And is there a way to bring those resources to bear? So I'll give an example. the Eastlake Foundation and the Atlanta Community Land Trust and the Cousins Family Foundation just partnered on the creation of the first community land trust project called the Trust at Eastlake that'll deliver 45 new homeownership opportunities for lower income families. So they can own a home in a really popular neighborhood that has all of the amenities that people want, where before that, the neighborhood really was not affordable for home ownership until we brought that land trust opportunity to the community.
I would also add, in addition to the quarterback, it sounds like you have a community cheerleader who is actually positioning the community to say it's a place of destination now, not just the quarterback analogy.
Yeah, I think that's right. All of the there's 27 community revitalizations that we support through the country, all of whom have a community quarterback organization at the heart, working side by side with residents in the neighborhood, really focusing again on execution that is both equitable and excellent. So many of them are doing just a wonderful job. I'm excited by what I see in Wilmington, Delaware, with Reach Riverside, working in a beautiful partnership with residents in the Riverside neighborhood, with the Housing Authority, with Eastside Charter School, with the city, and other partners, again, to really create change in the neighborhood that really harnesses the energy and the passion of the neighborhood to create obvious, durable pathways to prosperity for the community. The team in Orlando, team in New Orleans, team in Omaha, both teams in Omaha, really just doing great work. And again, you know, working to make sure that this really complex, long-term cross-sectoral work is executed to meet the community's needs and desires and executed with excellence and equity. And from my standpoint, you can't have excellence without equity, and you can't have equity without excellence.
So you mentioned you're in 27 communities across the country. Mm-hmm. How do you pick those communities? What's that process look like? Because I could assume you have a long waiting list, or what's your selection process and your targeting process look like?
Yeah. So the first thing I'd share with you is we only go where we're invited. So, okay. You know, we don't have a list on a wall somewhere that says we want to be in these five cities. We go where we are invited. And, you know, this work is really disruptive. It requires all the participants involved, these sometimes big public sector actors like school systems or public housing authorities or the city, to be willing to do things differently than they've done them in the past, right? Because what's been happening in the past hasn't been working very well for families in the community. So part of the assessment on the front end is about kind of the readiness of community members and stakeholders like cities, housing authorities, and other public sector partners to do this work. We also look early on what kind of leadership from the community and the broader city is interested and willing to be involved in this work. It's really important that leaders from the neighborhood and leaders from outside the neighborhood are able to work together to really assess whether we're the right partner for a particular community. As I said, you know, a lot of people will knock on our door and they all say, oh, this is what they want. And then, you know, when you start to get into it, the question is, do you have the stick-to-itiveness, the perseverance? Do you have the willingness to work with these great big public systems to help them do things better differently? Do you have the ability to get policies changed sometimes at the federal, state, and local levels that will allow us to create a healthy, robust neighborhood opportunity for the people who live there? So front end, opportunity, readiness of the community, the leadership. And then we look at two very practical things. Is there land where you can do high quality mixed income housing? And sometimes that means replacing housing that has outlived its useful life, like sometimes very old distressed public housing or other privately owned housing that really is not doing the people who live there any favors. And then we also look about what are the partnerships available for high quality early learning, and how could we help either bring, create, or work with an existing elementary school to really create a wonderful elementary school that serves people in the neighborhood beautifully. Those are kind of the big things that we look at on the front end.
I love that. Thank you for sharing, Carol. And we have so much more to get to, but we need to take a break here. Coming up in the second part of my conversation with Carol Naughton, Carol talks about the impact purpose-built communities is having on our country.
I am sustained by this work because of the quality of the folks that I get to work with, both at Purpose Built, the quality of the folks I get to work with at the neighborhood level across our network, the partners that we are developing across the country, because I think the work that we do is an incredibly important part of the solution of creating an America that meets kind of the aspirations of our founding fathers.
Thanks for listening to Changemakers with Katie Gore. To find out more about Katie, go to quadel.com. That's QUADEL.com. This has been a production of Forbes Books Radio.